You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
What is it that gets us so caught up in wanting to have control over everything in our lives? What is it that gets us to that place where we're grasping to try to maintain everything around us, grab for control? This is Lee Baucom, and this is the Save the Marriage Podcast, and this is the podcast designed to help you save your marriage, whether you are in the midst of a marriage crisis or whether you're just trying to head off a marriage crisis. And today, we want to look about at that fact of what happens with that controlling behavior, because I've heard it over and over. I've heard people say, you know, my spouse just says you're too controlling. I've got to get away from this. And you may look at yourself and say, I don't feel like I'm the one who's controlling. And yet, maybe that's the problem. Maybe we have gotten into the habit, all of us, of expecting ourselves to be able to control everything. And because of that, we try to control everyone. I hear it from people every day telling me that their spouses just revealed how angry and hurt they are by the controlling behavior. And many are even on the verge of a divorce because of this dynamic. Many people tell me that they did not even realize they were being controlling. But in reflection, sometimes many are able to see that they were indeed controlling. Sometimes it comes at the stake of trying to save a marriage that is on the verge of falling apart, and so they're doing everything they can to keep it on its tracks. But what does cause the controlling behavior? Why do some people seem to need to find a way of controlling others? And why is it many people find themselves constantly seeking to have the outcome the way they wanted, eliminating anyone else's outcome or opinion? Controlling behavior has a central theme to it. In fact, there is one central cause to controlling behavior. The reason behind controlling behavior is very important to understand if you want to change the behavior. In fact, until you fully understand how much this one emotion affects you, you'll be constantly working and striving to control the situations around you, even if that is a losing proposition. Oh, and by the way, this isn't just about spouses. People try to control spouses, sure, but also a child, also people who work with them, also friends, people who work for them, and it's a recipe for failure. It's also a recipe for misery, not just your misery, but for those around you. Okay, so what is that one emotion? The one emotion that gets us all in trouble. What is it that drives us to the controlling behavior? I know it's going to sound very simple, but just hear me out a little bit. Just think about whether this is true or not for you. The real root of controlling behavior is fear. That's the emotion. That's the emotion that will get you to shift from being controlling even when things are going well. You get to that place where even if things are going well, you have the fear in you, somewhere in you, if something is going to fall apart. You know, just you wait, watch and see if the other shoe doesn't fall. And so you begin to work to control even when things are going well. Now, the interesting thing is that some people have elevated their controlling behavior to the point of trying to pass it off as an okay trait, even a positive attribute. I've heard many people say, oh, I'm a control freak. That's just the way I am. I just like to have things my way, or I'm just this way. The way it is said betrays the fact that they are deep down rather proud of this fact. Whenever we elevate a negative trait, we know we're headed for trouble. We've managed to justify our own behavior and force it on other people. Sure, we all want things our way, but sometimes we get to that place where we can't have it any other way. We won't even allow others to have an opinion. And if they do something, it is not up to our standards. We take over and tell them what to do, or even do it ourselves. Now, when this behavior gets ingrained, then it is shifted to a dangerous level. This often happens in a marriage, and unfortunately, when there is a marriage crisis, it's even easier to become more and more controlling. This is because fear is being activated on a regular day-to-day, maybe even hour-to-hour, maybe even moment-to-moment basis. You're fearful that something could happen, that you will lose this relationship, and so you control more and more, and in the process get less and less of what you want. Fear is what drives controlling behavior, even if you are unaware of the fear and anxiety, and even if you're aware of it. Now, the fear, it comes from two different places. One is the fear of being out of control. This is the fear of not being able to control your environment, something spinning in ways you don't want them to, and a feeling and inability to move things in the direction you want. You know, we all have that place where we just feel like we don't have control over it. Maybe it's decisions that are happening around us, decisions other people are making. We just don't feel like we have any say-so. Sometimes it's just the fact that things happen in life that we can't prevent. All of that makes life spin around us in ways that feels like we are out of control. Now, the second one is related, and that's the feeling of fear that you will not get what you want and what you think you need. When you're afraid that you're not going to get what you want, we can try to control the situation in an attempt to get what we want. Now, that fear can cause lots of problems in a relationship because in the midst of trying to get what we want, we're probably affecting what somebody else wants in a negative way. In other words, if I'm trying to force a situation so that I get what I want, you're not likely to get what you want. But let's be clear at this point. Control really is an illusion. It does not work, it's not effective, and it only creates resentment on the part of those around us. So why do we do it? Because on the few times that it does actually work, at least short term, it convinces us that we can control the situation. We get positive reinforcements for something that doesn't really work. And then when it doesn't work, we keep remembering the time that it did work and decide we just need to try harder. And when we do that, we just become more controlling. Okay, so let me pause here and say, does that sound familiar to you? Is this a place where you find yourself, that you're caught in this pattern of being controlling, even if you don't want to be? And maybe you even have a glimpse of the places where you have fear. You know, it could be the fear of losing this relationship, fear of losing stability, fear of losing access to the kids. I mean, there are lots of places that that fear can evolve from, the reasons we give that fear when we're in the midst of a marriage crisis. But in the midst of it, it's all about fear. You see, built into the control is the belief that we are right. If you don't think you're right, you would not be trying to control things. We always change. You know, if somebody says, so you keep doing the same thing, why do you keep doing that? Well, the only reason you keep doing it is because you think you're right. You think you're doing it the right way until something blows that apart. Now, let's be clear here. I'm not saying that everybody sets out to control with evil intentions or bad intentions. In fact, I think that most people start out in controlling ways with the best of intentions, of wanting your life to be good and probably even your family's life to be good. You know, when you find the controlling element in parenting, it's usually because the person wants the best for that child. It's just that the best for that child is rarely achieved by being controlling for them, or even controlling to them. So over time, controlling behavior causes resentment on the part of the person who's being controlled. And over time, it also forces the person who is controlling to always be right and always be responsible. And in that setup, both people lose. In a marriage, when there is a controlling person or controlling behavior, the other person has to follow and allow himself or herself to be controlled. The couple sets up a dynamic of controlled and controlling between them, and it begins to eat away at the relationship. Now, this is a topic that I cover pretty heavily in my Save the Marriage system. So if you find that this is a piece of your relationship, whether you're the one who's being controlled or that you're the one who's doing the controlling, please look into the information at SaveTheMarriage.com to find a way to deal with that. It's got to be broken. And today I'm just going to give you some hints on how to do that. I can't go into it completely, but I want to get you to a good place of the beginning point of this. You see, what happens when there's a controlled, controlling environment is that it creates a child-parent relationship. So the controlling person becomes the parent, and the controlled person becomes the child. And whenever there is a parent-child relationship, that child will eventually hit the teen years, whether it's really a child or your spouse acting like a child or you acting like a child. You're going to hit the teenage years. And at that point, you suddenly have a rebellious spouse on your hands or a rebellious child. You have someone rebellious on your hands, or you may become rebellious yourself, even if there was some benefit to the controlled, controlling relationship. Now, I've talked extensively about my belief that marriage is built on creating a we, creating an entity that's separate from the you and me. It's not about giving up the you and me. It's about bringing that together and say, we're in this together. We have each other's backs. A controlled, controlling relationship is not about being a we. It is a you, me relationship where one person's opinion is lost to the other. And to have a we relationship, both people's opinions have to come to the process. Two strong people come together and create the team. So when one's opinions or actions are negated to the other, the real harm is done in this controlled, controlling relationship. An important point about controlling behavior is it's based on one person's standards. A standard is something you expect of yourself. It's a standard of your expectation of how you will be in the world, how you will treat other people, and how you will fulfill your duties, and how you will interact. Unfortunately, we often expect others to have the same standard. And this is just not the case. The problem comes not from our own standard, but when we try to place it on somebody else. And when we're upset that they do not fulfill our standard. Practically speaking, it is not possible to give your standard to someone else. I'm not talking about philosophy here. I'm not talking about how it'd be nice if you could say to somebody, hey, you've got to live your best. You've got to be honest all the time. You've got to, you know, fill in the blank to your own standard. I'm not talking about that philosophically. I'm talking practically. For example, you may have a standard. You'll be honest with people around you. However, you can't expect those people to be honest with you. To be clear, there may be consequences if someone is not honest with you, but you cannot force them to be honest. Now, this often happens with parents and children. Parents will place their standard on a child, but the child will do otherwise, which is why I say this is not a philosophical statement. It would be nice to be able to make sure that our children follow our high standards, but it is not within our possibility. For example, let's go back to that standard of honesty. You may have consequences for someone if they're dishonest with you, but they may be lying to everybody else around them. There's nothing you can do to stop that. So practically speaking, you cannot put your standards on somebody else. It's not philosophical. But when we're in a controlling spot, it's often because we're trying to get our standard fulfilled by somebody else. For example, many couples fight about housekeeping. One or the other will perform a household duty that will not quite be to the standards of the other person. The person with the higher standard, and therefore the higher frustration, treats the other person like a child. They try to teach them, to coach them, to coax them, to force them to do the duty correctly. Sometimes they just do it themselves, just to save time or save the argument. This is not, as it's often phrased between the couple, a question of doing it correctly or incorrectly, but a difference in standards. But it's manifest in controlling behavior. So what do you do about your controlling behavior? If your spouse is telling you that they can no longer tolerate the controlling behavior, how do you solve this issue? Okay, well, I have some suggestions for you. The first thing you have to do is acknowledge what you're doing. Notice the times you feel the need to take over. Notice the times when you either coach or coax someone to do something your way. Acknowledge that the fear is driving you. Then consider what this fear might be about. What is being evoked in you? Where does that fear come from? Why a fearful response? What's the root of that fear? What feels at risk? Okay, that gives you a place to begin to understand when it's happening. Notice that the behavior is truly worthless and usually pretty ineffective. Couples have the same arguments over and over throughout the years. Rebellious behavior is often the answer to the controlling behavior, and in the end, at best, you get a stalemate, and at worst, you get conflict, anger, resentment, and finally, disdain. You get to that place of disconnection because as you're working to be controlling, the other person is working to not be controlled. The disconnection happens step by step by step. So the first thing is to acknowledge what you're doing, to look back and say, where am I being controlling? If my spouse keeps telling me this, where am I doing it? Okay, so what's the next step? Well, the next step is going to be kind of a surprise to you probably. The next step is to breathe. Seriously, breathe. Remember that controlling behavior is based in fear. And fear happens deep in your brain. Thoughts or threats are perceived long before you're consciously aware of them, and your unconscious brain detects the threat and puts you in a fear mode. Breathing is a way of short-circuiting the process. Not just breathing, though. I'm talking about a special kind of breathing that's been called belly breathing or meditational breathing. It's also the breathing you do when you're singing or playing an instrument or you know, like an air instrument, like a trumpet or something. The belly breathing happens when you breathe from your belly. If you don't know how to do this, it's pretty easy. And by the way, you've probably lost your capacity of doing it naturally because of all of those moments of somebody saying, stand up straight and hold in your belly. Because when you're holding in your belly, you can't belly breathe. So how do you do it? Well, you lie down. Lie down on a bed, place your hand over your chest, right over your chest bone, right in the middle of your chest, and place the other one right over your belly button. Now you begin to breathe. And what you're trying to do is figure out how to breathe so that only your hand over your belly moves. The hand on your chest should be completely still. When you do this, it is a relaxing breathing that tells your brain there's nothing to fear. So when you feel yourself getting anxious and uptight and feel the need to correct how something is happening or force an outcome, belly breathe. Breathe slowly and consciously and your brain calms down a bit. This is true in any situation. You get the phone call from the school about your child's grades, you gotta breathe. When you're about to meet with the principal or the teacher about your child, you gotta breathe. When you're about to meet with your coworkers or someone who's working for you, you've got to breathe and go into the process with fear at a lower point. This is fighting fear on a natural basis. It's how you fight anxiety naturally. One of the most powerful ways to do it. And this is a key technique for calming yourself down in any situation. Belly breathing helps tremendously because it's working on the subconscious, the unconscious, the below your conscious awareness in your body of calming it down. And so as you're feeling the anxiety, the butterflies, the adrenaline in your system, belly breathe. As you do that, your body returns to a much more natural state and you won't feel the need as much to control. You may want to change things, but it gives you a much more rational place. Now, belly breathing, you often do it with a count. So you might count 5 or 6 breaths in, seconds in and 7 or 8 seconds out. So it's a slow inhale, slow exhale. You might find that in the beginning you have to do it a little more rapidly or you'll get a little extra dizziness, but work on it and see if you can master the belly breathing. Okay, the third step is to be mindful of the interactions. Identify where you're becoming controlling. With whom do you become controlling and what are the circumstances that trigger you to become controlling? Begin to be mindful of these moments. Now watch yourself as you move into these circumstances. Be careful when you know they're coming. Observe your thinking and what happens to your thinking. Your goal is to recognize more and more when these moments occur. Now, as you notice these moments, you'll be more mindful of the response it elicits in you, and you can decide on a more conscious reaction. So then step number 4 is to begin to develop your emotional awareness. For many of us, when we're fearful or anxious, we stop noticing our emotions and start acting on our emotions. But you may find that if you just sit with your emotions, not react to them, just sit with them, they're not dangerous, nothing will happen, and you can choose not to act or to react to the emotion. Emotional awareness is not about changing the emotion, but about realizing the emotions as they are and realizing that it does not require any particular action on your part. This is when you decide to sit with your emotions rather than react and respond to your emotions. Remember Jack Canfield's his equation of success. E plus R equals O. Events plus response equal outcome. There are events around us that just happen to us. But we have a choice of our response, and that leads to a different outcome. So when we choose our response, we change the outcome. It's not events equal outcome, and it's not our response equals outcome, but events plus our response equals outcome. Okay, number 5, be open to other possibilities and potentials. Are there other ways of parenting a child? Are there other ways of loading the dishwasher? Are there other ways of dealing with the bills? Are there other ways of deciding what should be done and what should not be done on the weekends? Are there other ways of thinking about the possibilities of your marriage? The answer is, of course. There are lots of different ways to do anything. And so, of course, there are different ways that you can do those household duties that seem to get couples so in trouble. There are different ways of relating to each other. The question is how you find the right place for both of you. And that takes a conversation. It takes the representation of both people's opinions. Now, that's a little more difficult when a marriage is in trouble. And so sometimes we get into thinking, well, when a marriage is in trouble, there's only one thing to do, and that's to save the marriage. And we miss the fact that it becomes binary then. Yes marriage or no marriage. Remember, there are three options. You can stay in the marriage the way things are. That's always a possibility. You can always leave and let things go. That's another option. The third option is to transform the relationship. And see, when we get into this place where we're fearful about what's going to happen, we get so caught in saving the marriage that we stop thinking about how to transform your marriage. We try to create something by stopping something instead of trying to create something in the midst of the process. So instead of being controlling, you can step back and work on other things. So be open to those possibilities of what else can happen. If you get away from the assumption that there is a wrong and a right, you're left with the possibility of other options all the time. Things may not be done your way, but that doesn't mean it's the wrong way. I love Richard Carlson. He was the author of Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and he was famous for saying that you can either be happy or you can be right, but you can't be both. And which do you want to be? Being open to the possibilities leads to happiness, but only after you get over your anxiety and your fear and your need to control. Okay, so one final thought for you. Don't suddenly go without notice and give up this controlling stuff. Don't do the opposite of controlling, because a lot of times we go from one end to the other. So for somebody who's very controlling suddenly says, well, I'm not going to do anything. I leave it all up to you. You don't want to go from being controlling to suddenly giving up all control. That's just not fair. It's often true that health is the place in between. It's where both people are responsible and make decisions and share perspectives. Let me give you a little mental image. Imagine for a minute that you're the trapeze catcher of a trapeze team. Your partner has for years released the trapeze bar and leapt into your arms waiting to be caught by you, right? The two of you have done it over and over and over and over and over and over. For years you've done it this way. So much so that both of you know exactly what to do, even with your eyes closed. In fact, with the flips that your partner is doing, your partner doesn't even see your hand, but grabs them every time. And each time your partner jumps, you catch. Then one day, without any notice or warning, you just quit catching. Your partner is left flailing through the air without a clue as to what happened. This is what happens when somebody goes from being very controlling to refusing to do anything, giving up all points of control. Both people are going to be off balance, and neither is going to land safely. Be clear about the places where you decide to give up control, and be clear about how to share that responsibility. Controlling behavior comes from fear. But it's a fear that is unwarranted and really useless. The threat is not often real, nor will catastrophe befall most of the issues around which people actually control. Today is the day to give up your control, or at least begin to loosen it and come to a partnership. It's a time to start a we and make a shift to a new partnership. If you're ready to do that, let me invite you to join me in the Save the Marriage system. You can find that at savethemarriage.com. Now, if you already have the system and you still found yourself getting stuck, if you find yourself unable to let go of that controlling behavior, it's a great time to get a little coaching. So I'm going to invite you to join my virtual coaching program, and you can learn more about that by going to savethemarriage.com/virtual coaching. That's /virtual coaching. Or just contact me, Lee@savethemarriage.com. Let go of the controlling behavior. It does not serve you. It does not serve your spouse, and it does not serve the marriage. Find another way. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best in creating a partnership and saving your marriage in the process.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.